Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Roxana Tiron, who covers defense, business, and national security and Congress for Bloomberg News. Previously, she covered defense for The Hill and was a reporter and assistant editor of National Defense Magazine in Arlington, Virginia, a fellow at the Washington Center for Politics and Journalism in Washington, D.C., and worked for CNN's Inside Politics and Worldview. Welcome to Background Briefing, Roxana Tiron.
Thank you for having me.
And Donald Trump is proposing a 10% boost in defense spending, adding $54 billion to the defense budget. And what's your sense then of going forward? Is this going to be challenged in any way? The Democrats don't have the votes, but what's the justification for this defense spending beyond his campaign promises? I mean, that's what it sounds like, that he's simply going to do whatever he said in the campaign, whether it makes sense or not.
Yeah, first of all, I think, yes, it is a way to fulfill his campaign promises. And I would just say that you should look at it as the opening salvo. He can propose a $54 billion dollar increase for the defense budget and cut elsewhere in the government's budgets and agencies, but Congress is the arm of government that needs to approve the budget, and so this is just the beginning. So even though the Democrats don't have the majority in the Senate, they do have some critical votes for any kind of appropriations bills, and they do have the Senate processes where they could stall or delay, and even stop any kind of bill that significantly cuts social programs, for example, from becoming law. It'd be a much harder fight, but it is possible.
Well, when I mentioned that there might be some pushback, on the other hand, Republican Senator John McCain said that this increased budget up to $603 billion, which the White House has just outlined, he's saying it's saying it's insufficient. So McCain...
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So what's his argument?
He and actually Max Thornberry, so they're the top Republicans on the Armed Services Committees in the Senate and the House. They have proposed their own budget blueprint, and their own budget blueprint for 2018, for fiscal 2018, is $640 billion. And that does not include war funds, which obviously are not subject to budget caps. They only count against the deficit. So they are clearly very unhappy with this proposal. It's a lot less than what they would, than what they proposed. So they've been very critical today of this move. They are also expecting a war supplemental for this fiscal year, for fiscal 2017. But because the supplemental is solely focused on war needs and fighting Islamic State and other military operations around the world, it actually limits the kind of money that can be spent on the big defense programs that both John McCain and Max Thornberry want to see. They have made the case that the military is significantly depleted, that the readiness for a future war is just not there anymore, that the military not only needs more personnel, and as you know, people are the most expensive, but also new fighter jets and ships and helicopters. So all of that money needs to come in the traditional regular defense budget. So even though the Trump administration is expected to ask for more war funds in 2017, and most likely their budget request will also include war funds for 2018, they're a little bit hamstrung on how to spend that money. They just want to see it on the big defense programs and personnel, so some of it cannot be spent through the war funds. And so that explains why both McCain and Thornberry are so dissatisfied with the budget request.
But where are they getting their numbers from and their the wish list? Is this some wish list that comes from the Pentagon itself, or does it come from outside groups like Frank Gaffney and others that are always beating the drum for more defense spending?
It's a combination. I would say they have done their staff and them have done their own analyses on what is needed, and they keep going back to the sort of pre budget caps, type of funding, and so they have made their own projections as to what is needed based on. I guess in particular what the services have told them sort of in recent months and you know last year about the state of the force and the state of their equipment, the state of their training and flying hours. And I think in part the services contributed to sort of the larger amount that they're projecting through their testimony. They also have submitted and this is all it's not considered official channels, but because Congress has requested and the Armed Services Committees have requested these lists that are called unfunded requirements or top unfunded requirements list, the services did submit to Congress, more than $23 billion worth of, equipment and personnel that they would need just in 2017 alone that Congress hasn't funded. So I think it's a combination of testimony on the Hill, of their direct talks with the services, their talks with think tanks, their own staff doing the analysis. So I think it's a bigger picture than just being influenced from the outside.
Now at this point, what the White House is telling us and the budget director is that this extra $54 billion that Donald Trump is asking for defense will be offset by cuts in the Environmental Protection Agency and the State Department. Well, the Environmental Protection Agency's total budget is only $8 billion a year, which is nothing compared to the Defense Department. And the State Department's annual budget is $50 billion. Of course, there's a little bit more to be taken out of that. So, and $22 billion in direct foreign aid. So let's start with the Environmental Protection Agency. That doesn't seem realistic. I mean, out of $8 billion, how much can they possibly save?
I mean, they haven't specifically said how much they would cut, but they specifically indicated that that the Environmental Protection Agency and State Department are sort of the biggest targets. But it's a little bit unrealistic to think that they can really shave off most of their budget. It's just not possible. And also, other agencies will most likely be targeted to make room for this $54 billion.
Well, that's when it gets there's going to be pushback, right? If they go after Social Security and Medicare, et cetera, and other social programs, because the president himself has promised he wouldn't touch those. So,
correct. Yes.
So what is what's left? I mean, there's not much discretionary spending, any rate, is there? That's non-defense.
Well, there isn't, but I mean, there's always agencies and always ways to cut more money. And as I said, at the beginning of our talk, it will be up to Congress. I mean, this is just a proposed budget. Congress has its own ideas where the money should go and how much money should go to various agencies. They also have their own ideas of how funding can be offset. And so this is just the beginning salvo. We don't really know yet how this is going to play out. But what is certain is that this is going to be a fight. And this is going to be a fight that the Democrats are not ready to lose. And we actually had a story today, a colleague of mine, Stephen Dennis, interviewed Dick Durbin, the second top Democrat in the Senate, who said that a shutdown might even a government shutdown might even be a possibility over proposed cuts. So we are just at the beginning of a pretty long financial or budgetary saga on Capitol Hill.
Well, traditionally, of course, the State Department doesn't have a domestic constituency, certainly not like the Defense Department, where so much money is spent on contractors, etc. Whereas the State Department, its $50 billion annual budget is not that large. So there's not, you know, there's not a lot of people in Washington that are going to come to the defense of the State Department. But when you're talking about $50 billion, if they cut 30% of that, which is what one of the White House officials said, that's a pretty, you know, one-third of a pretty low budget. What's your sense of the political support that there might be for the State Department?
I think you are going to see some pushback on such cuts. For example, I mean, it would spell a lot about you know, the United States foreign policy as well, and the United States involvement in the world. And some might argue that the State Department already has a pretty small budget and is underfunded. And so I think you need to look at certain senators. I think you know, like Lindsey Graham, who's in charge of the, you know, of the Appropriations Committee with jurisdiction over the State Department. And I don't think this is something that he, you know, that he would easily agree to. And it's not just Democrats, it's Republicans as well. You know, he's talking about, you know, creating various funds or, you know, sort of grants to help counter Russia's influence in Eastern Europe. He has other, you know, plans in terms of, you know, countering Islamic State's influence in the Middle East. All of that costs money. All of that costs U.S. involvement. And so I don't think that these are sort of, you know, easily said and done. I think people are going to carefully study this proposal and then probably counter it with their own.
Well, but you're talking about soft power, aren't you? When you talk about the Middle East countering Islamic State, that's in many ways, the Defense Department's already there bombing, and they've got advisors on the ground, etc. So that's hard power, and that's, you know, obviously different and separate from what they call soft power. And that is how to...
Yes, that is correct. But you have to also understand that a lot of the lawmakers on Capitol Hill do believe in soft power. And I think that's where you're going to see the resistance. And that's, you know, and it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, Islamic State or Russia. I mean, there's obviously other areas that they want to tackle in the world. And I think, you know, cutting the State Department so significantly would just hobble any kind of effort.
Right, but that's what I was going to suggest. When you mentioned Russia, the Russians under Putin have developed what they call hybrid warfare, where you don't go to full battlefield and you do it very subtly. You use surrogates, you use a lot of propaganda. Use a lot of influence, already we've got this major scandal here with the extent to which Russia was involved in influencing our recent election, and now there's charges that they're involved in trying to influence the elections in the Netherlands, in France, and in Germany. So is that all under the umbrella of soft power, and how much is your interactions with the Congress indicate that they're aware of this? Because there's obviously a lot of people are saying we need an inquiry into what happened with Russia. And then on the other hand, there are people like Devin Nunes, the chair of the House Intelligence Committee, is trying to say that there's nothing there and we shouldn't have an inquiry. So it seems like when you talk about needing more money for soft power to counter Russian influence in terms of hybrid warfare, you're going to run up against that argument over the extent to which Russia was involved in meddling in the U.S. election.
In part, but also there is widespread agreement that Russia is meddling in Eastern Europe. And I think what Senator Graham was talking about in trying to establish a grant and a special fund to counter Russia was in particular to not only, I guess, help with the U.S. influence in the area and help counter Russia's spread of hybrid warfare, you know, particularly, you know, for NATO allies and others in Eastern Europe. So I think it's too early to tell on how this is going to really play out. As I said, this is just the opening salvo, and so they still have to present the details and sort of the minutiae of how they're going to go about cutting the budget. They're only supposed to submit a what we call on Capitol Hill a skinny budget on somewhere around March 13th or 14th. And then the sort of more detailed budget is just going to come much later, a couple months later, just because the OMB director has just been installed. So I think you're going to see a lot of debate on Capitol Hill and some surprising debate for perhaps the president's party, as you saw today with John McCain and Max Thornberry being extremely critical that this is not enough money for defense. I think this might play out in surprising ways.
Well, just in closing, one of the areas that White House officials have said that the Trump request for increased money, $54 billion in the 2018 budget, is for shipbuilding, military aircraft, and establishing, quote, a more robust presence in key international waterways and choke points, such as the Straits of Hormuz and the South China Sea. You can't sort of just write a check and suddenly the next day you've got a bunch of extra warships in the Straits of Hormuz, right?
No, absolutely not. You cannot. And in fact, shipbuilding could take quite a while, particularly if you want to build, if you look at the littoral combat ship, for example, which might not even, depending on where they are in international waters, might not even be the appropriate ship. But it's an extremely troubled program that the Pentagon is cutting off with 32 ships and then figuring out another way to build a new frigate, you know, to fit the requirements. So we've been going back and forth for about a decade or so on this program. Building carriers takes a long, long time, and so does building destroyers and submarines. So I don't think it's something that you're going to be able to see in 2018. What you're able to see is maybe speed up production and order materials and sort of get things going to build more ships and as congressmen and women like to call it as a down payment, to start building up the Navy. But it's going to take years.
Well, Roxana Tarun, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And again, I've been speaking with Roxana Tarun, who covers defense, business, and national security and Congress for Bloomberg News. Previously, she covered defense for The Hill and was a reporter and assistant editor of National Defense Magazine in Arlington, Virginia. She's a fellow at the Washington Center for Politics and Journalism and worked for CNN's Inside Politics and Worldview. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.